It is always a pleasure to step into the garden with horticulturist Charisse Viljoen, and she is with us on the line today to tackle your gardening questions and to talk to us about what to do when it's as windy as it is right now in a Cape Town garden. Just for those who missed it earlier this year, the news that Charisse has taken on a new role as the general manager of the historic Old Nectar Homestead and Gardens in the Jonkershoek Valley. And she's got the most beautiful jobs. I know she's sitting on a bench surrounded by that gorgeous garden as she speaks to us this afternoon. Charisse, it's always lovely to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Papa.
And I know your garden is looking forward to welcoming visitors over the summer season. Before we talk about the wind, won't you just remind us why we should come and visit Old Nectar?
Oh, there's three wonderful reasons. Besides the fact, of course, that you've just described it so well, the heritage and the history of the manor house and the beauty of the garden, but we're pet friendly and there's not many occasions you can take your dog.
Yeah.
As long as they stay on a leash or be let off if they're well behaved. We're wheelchair friendly, which is lovely. So people can get around the entire garden in a wheelchair, which is quite important. I think there's quite often not many places a wheelchair is able to navigate comfortably and still enjoy everything that able-legged people are able to see. And the third thing is you're welcome to bring your own picnic. Pack a picnic, bring it along, and enjoy the garden. Don't come for an hour or two. You'll be sorry you didn't leave more time. And come and sit and relax. It is such a tranquil, beautiful space to spend time in.
And with lots of shade, because I know you've got those gorgeous 200-year-old oak trees casting their shade over everything. The rose garden, I believe the dahlias are looking magnificent at the moment. So lots of reasons to visit Old Nectar over the coming season. If you want to check out details and where to find them and all of that information, what their opening hours are, etc., we'll direct you to their website, oldnectar.com. Charisse, look, I'm married to a windsurfer. He is probably one of a handful of people in Cape Town who's actually happy to have the current weather conditions. Everybody else is cursing the blasted wind, which makes it so difficult to enjoy our outdoor spaces at the moment. What does one do with a garden when you have wind like this?
Well, Pippa, you know, it's humans get antsy in the wind. It's actually like a static energy that builds up with electrical charge as the dust in the air, especially the southeaster, that lifts up the dust in the dry air. So if anyone always wonders, why am I feeling antsy? It's actually a scientific reaction to the friction and the static in the air, you know, around you. You're not crazy. Well, I mean, you are crazy because of the wind, but for a good reason. And in the garden, the best thing sometimes to do when you're looking at your garden design is to obviously screen off your prevailing wind. So you need to plant a hedge. You need to put up a bit of a pergola. You need to create a little room, but never something solid. So even if you have one wall, the other three or two walls, as in plant walls, mm-hmm. need to be able to allow the wind through. What happens when you create something solid is the wind actually bounces against up and then spirals and turbulence creates circles on the other side of the wall. And it's actually sometimes can be worse. So a barrier to slow it down and to ease it and create some space. Watering early morning, reduce the pressure of your watering so the droplets are heavier. Rather move your sprinkler around. Hand watering is actually best in the wind.
Yeah.
Just don't stand upwind from it. And also the plant choices, but we'll see what the listeners have to ask.
And if you would like to ask a question, the number to dial is 021-446-0567. You're also welcome to send your question by WhatsApp to 072-567-1567. We've had quite a lot of pest-related queries in the last couple of sessions, Charisse. And right at the end of the last gardening segment, Jen in Plumstead wrote in, and I promised her I would start with her question today because we didn't get to it last time. She would like to know, what is the name of the black beetles that seem to be coming out now? Not Christmas beetles, but bigger with longer legs. She is finding them more and more in her garden at the moment. Any idea?
I need a picture. The black beetles I've been noticing are the ones with the three little white dots on them. But they could be Schaefer beetles. They could be all sorts. I would need a picture.
Jen, if you're able to send us a follow-up message with a picture, we'll gladly send it on to Charisse and ask her to try and identify it for you. Okay, 072-567-1567. The black beetle with the white dots on the back, how destructive can that be in the garden? Charisse, tell us more.
They eat right through the buds. They seem to be really attracted to the buds of your plants and do so much damage. They're called a carpet beetle of some sort. And the best thing to do is to do traps or hand catch them. Or you just allow a little bit of nibbling to go on. You know, I always recommend that. But a hand catch is usually the best thing to do. And then I donate them to the local field or to my dustbin. I can never kill anything. And just keep an eye out for them. But they will chew your buds and petals of your flowers.
Okay, so you either learn to live with it or you have to make the effort of going out and picking them off manually. Charisse, is there a best time of day to do that? Is there a time of day where when you're most likely to be able to find them?
They tend to come out just after mid-morning. They're quite inactive in the morning when it's very cold or in the late afternoon. But anything from mid-morning and to mid-afternoon, you'll find them moving amongst the plants, collecting the pollen, and if some of them are pollinators. So be careful. Watch what the beetles are doing before you just grab every beetle you see. Some of them might actually be predators. If they move quite fast and they seem to be not eating the plants, they're often eating the pests on your plants. But if they're lurking around and gentle, you know, you can definitely see they're chomping away, then collect those. And in the heat of the day is the best time to find them.
Okay, thanks for the advice. Jen, I hope that is at least some help to you, if that is the particular beetle that you're talking about. Otherwise, do send up that follow-up for a photograph, please. Now, this is an interesting question about fynbos. Laura wondering just how much sunshine fynbos needs to have. She has a garden that gets a bit of sun, but only for a few hours a day, and mainly in the autumn and winter. She says roughly 3 hours of sun at that time of day. Would it be possible to cultivate a decent fynbos garden in those kind of conditions?
They generally will grow, but they won't flower very well. They need that heat. It's what they're used to. It's what they're designed for. You're talking about wind and heat, the hairy leaves, reducing transpiration and the narrowness of their leaves. So because of the hairs, they don't get as much contact on the leaf surface from the sunlight because of the narrow leaves to prevent, you know, protection against the sun. They don't get as much sunlight contact because they really are designed to be in full sun. You can sometimes get away with it if they're getting the afternoon sun. Often the heat and the contact with the sun's rays is enough, but really shady areas, they will grow most of the time, but they will not flower very well and they'll look scraggy.
Okay. Laura, good luck with that. Well, we go from one extreme to the other because the next question is about somebody who's got too much sun by the sounds of things. Charisse, Justin has sent us a WhatsApp saying, what can I do to protect or help my garden? I recently planted some blooms that they said are full sunflowers, but they don't seem to be surviving the pale sun. The same with my herbs that I have potted. What can I do to protect or help them during the period when they're in immediate direct sunlight? My basil, rosemary, lavender, thyme, dahlia, etc. all seem to be struggling, particularly during the period of direct sun.
Well, you could literally put up an umbrella if you wanted to using your garden brolly. And if you're worried about, you know, that blowing away, currently my advice is not very good in the weather that we're experiencing, is that you can actually buy a strip of shade cloth and make a MacGyver strip, you know, of poles, just sticks from the garden, or a bend a chicken wire frame over them. And just while those seedlings are really sensitive to that heat, you can then just put that shade cloth over, temporary kind of shelter structure that you can pull off early morning and late afternoon. You do need to let them have some of that sun, otherwise they will not harden. They'll grow as if they're in full shade, okay, and they will remain soft. But I know exactly what he means. You can feel that heat of the midday sun literally burning them. You can see them shrinking under the sun. So shelter them from that, but take it off at the other times. The other thing is not to water in the middle of the day. Water on the leaves also concentrates the sunlight's rays and actually burn them. Okay. So that early morning, keep the ground wet, not the foliage wet, so that they can cope with the heat of the sun. And that would be my best advice for that temporary shelter or your garden brolly. You can stand over them yourself. You cast a shadow. Do what you need to do to save your baby.
It sounds like Justin cares deeply about them, so he might well be willing to do that. Justin, thank you so much for your question. And I hope that advice is going to be helpful to the herbs in particular. If you would like to do what Justin did, send a WhatsApp to 0725671567. We're chatting to Charisse Viljoen, who is a horticulturist and, of course, these days, manager of the beautiful Old Nectar Gardens in the Jonkershoek Valley outside Stellenbosch. Charisse, our next question is an anonymous WhatsApp, but it goes back to the issue of the wind. I was wondering, says the questioner, if the wind contributes to the drying out of the soil.
Absolutely. Oh, it's terrible for soil, particularly if you haven't listened to me in all my other times I advised you and made sure you kept your leaf litter and compost on the soil. A lot of people say that the soil actually just gets blown, their compost layer, their mulch layer, just gets blown right off. And I can tell you what helps with that is straw. It somehow becomes like pickup sticks in the wind. So if you could, if you're struggling with wind blowing whatever soil mulch you're trying to put down right off, then use straw mixed in amongst it, and it actually helps trap it. And then always plant your soil full of ground covers. So cover the soil. It dries it out terribly. It's such a waste of our groundwater and of the water that we need to remember is precious going into this dry summer season that we experience every year. You know, Pippa, I always say it's not winter rainfall, we're summer drought. So do what you can to cover your soil. The other thing I often do is I lay tree rings down on my really bare patches, and I lift them in winter to then plant in the place where that inner tree trunk of the tree ring has then decomposed and made a beautiful friable mulch. But if I can't plant, I go scrounging along the side of the road. I find wood stumps. You do whatever you can. You can even cut branches. Any pruning you're doing at the moment, lay it on your soil between your shrubs. Just imagine that the same abrasion you are feeling against your skin and in your hair and on your cheeks in the wind, so is the soil and the plants feeling it. You know, Pippa, oddly enough, a little bit of wind is good for plants. So you don't want to go overboard. I mean, this gale force is terrible. But a slight breeze strengthens plants. They actually put more strengthening tissue in the corner of their cells, and they're stronger for it. Okay. But when they're young, they're too brittle. I mean, they can snap, and it's too damaging when it's this strong. So do what you can.
I mean, it's so strong. The forecast for this evening, it's going to be one of those days where we're holding on to each other to try and stay upright, Cherise. So you can just imagine what a poor young plant standing on its own is going to be facing in the face of that kind of wind. Now, you mentioned the importance of ground cover. Johan in Wellington has been very good and has covered his flower beds with a nice ground cover scrub. But his question is, now that that's there, how do I add compost to the soil?
Oh, I love doing it. It's like... You hand throw your compost, and I don't know what other word to use. It's a Cherise word, but you frith it. You frith the leaves. You ruffle, I guess is the proper English term. You ruffle the leaves, and you literally shake it in between. So you top dress. When your ground cover is nice and thick on your soil, you would treat it as you would be putting top dressing on your lawn. You don't bury what's there. You put on a light layer. You water it in. You frith it in with your hands. And then you layer again and you do the same. And that will be enough to get it down to the soil. Also, plants make their own humic content. They'll be dropping their own leaves and losing a bit of their own roots and creating their own little bit of compost underneath their foliage cover. So they're also doing their part to help you.
Okay, I love the word froof. It's making me think of when you've added bubble bath to the bath water and you want to sort of froof it up to get it fluffing. It sounds to me like it's the same sort of motion that you're describing, Cherise. So, Johan, practice your best technique. Thank you so much. Well, Cherise, somebody sent a question in about old nectar saying, I'd really love to come and visit, but I can't walk easily. Do you perhaps have wheelchairs available for hire? I know you mentioned it is very wheelchair friendly for those who bring their own, but is that an option?
Absolutely. We have two wheelchairs, not for hire, simply for use. If you need them, we have two strollers and two wheelchairs, and we'll make them available on your arrival.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Thank you so much. So to the listener who sent that in, please do give them a call or head off to their website, oldnectar.com, and maybe just call them in advance to ask if one is available on the day that you're hoping to visit. That's a lovely thing to do, Cherise. I wish everybody would get it right. Well done.
Well, absolutely. The Old Nectar Garden is very much about intimate, gentle, beautiful experiences. And we've spent a lot of time thinking about how best the visitors can enjoy the garden. One of my favorite signs is as you park your car, it invites you to sit on the benches, to enjoy, to observe the views. It doesn't invite you to trot around and see everything. Mm-hmm. Please make use of the benches. It's lovely.
I love that approach. We all need it so desperately at this time of year, Cherise, to just sit and breathe and digest a little bit. Okay, back we go to the gardening questions. We've got about 5 minutes left. If you're sitting thinking you might phone in, please pick up your phone right now and call us on 021 446 0567 or send that voice note to 07 0872 567 1567. Somebody saying they have a lawn full of flat weeds. They do tend to die off in the summer, but I know that they will be back in winter with a vengeance. What to do? Is it better to spray them now or wait until winter, or plant new grass entirely?
Do not wait, because they will have set seed and they will have made bulbs. If you're going to tackle it, do it straight away. If the flat weed has a broader leaf, you can use particular herbicides that target broad leaf leaves versus strap-like leaves, and your lawn is a strap-like leaf. With some various effects, instead of spraying the entire lawn, I actually prefer to target the weed. Should some of the lawn die, it recovers quicker than the dead weed, which is now gone. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, hand pulling is a really good de-stress, although most people don't have time for anything like that, sitting on their lawns and weeding. And if they have tried these two methods before, either hand pulling or spraying without success, and it is extremely bothersome, then if you can afford it, I actually do think just pull up the entire lawn and start again, because once they've got a hold of the gap between your grass blades and your grass roots, it is a forever problem that you're fighting.
Okay, thanks very much for the advice. All right, it would not be a Cape Talk gardening segment without a lemon tree question, and
no.
Here it is, Cherise. It's from Barbara in Kenilworth. Barbara has a lemon tree in a big pot, and she says the soil around the base is covered in self-sown impatiens. My husband says it uses up the nutrients in the soil. Must I pull them out?
I love this lemon tree question. Oh, I feel very, very happy with this one. No. Do not pull them out. Impatiens are as thirsty as lemon trees are. So they make excellent companions, friends in a pot. And also, I don't want the soil bare around the lemon tree's roots. If the impatiens are slurping up the nutrients, feed the tree a little bit more. But do not pull them out. I am choosing the wife's side on this. And the husband gets a big fat no.
Okay, thank you very much. And Barbara, stand your ground on that one. Thank you for your question. Let's go to Linda's question. Linda has a lazy housewife green bean seedling in a window box type container that was planted quite some time ago, a couple of weeks ago. She's noticed that the leaves are turning brown and look as though they could die if I don't change something, but I don't know what I'm doing wrong. She says, I water a little bit every day. They get sun between 11:30 and 4:30 p.m. How would you diagnose that lazy housewife bean?
I would imagine it's one of two things. Unless the soil is dry, she must not be watering. You could actually be overwatering. And then direct sunlight through glass can actually burn. You always got to think of plants indoors feeling pretty much the same way humans do. If it's unpleasant for you to hold your arm against the window in the sun for an hour, so it would be for the plant. They want good light, but not always that direct sunlight through the glass. So it would be those two things that I would look at.
Okay, thank you very much. On the SMS line, somebody asking about composting, whether coffee grounds are good to use in compost. Cherise, any thoughts on that?
Really good, really good. They provide that, you know, they're already ground, decomposed. They're not fresh anymore. And fresh plant material, usually takes a bit of nitrogen from the soil and from the plant. But they're already in a great state of seed decomposition. They make a friable, beautiful planting medium. It's never good to use anything entirely by itself. That's not natural. But working it into your soil and your compost and then using it, it's a really good additive. I highly recommend it.
There are so many fascinating uses for leftover coffee grounds, Cherise. In a few weeks' time, we're doing an interview with somebody who's making beauty products out of them. Now you're telling me they're great for composting in the garden. I wonder what will come next. We know about the exfoliating properties. I wonder who else has got a creative use for leftover coffee grounds they want to tell us about. We'd love a voice note or an SMS, please. The last WhatsApp is a comment more than a question, and it takes us back to the start of the show, and that question from, was it Jen, about the beetles. Sarah's written in from Hout Bay saying, we've noticed not beetles, but a lot of big bees, the big black carpenter bees. I'm not sure whether they are indigenous or an alien species. Any idea?
I don't actually know. I mean, I've grown up with them. I don't think I actually think they are indigenous, but I need a listener to absolutely confirm that for me. And they do very little harm. They're great pollinators, although having said they do very little harm, I mean to plants.
Yeah,
they can do great harm to woodwork. Uh-huh. That's why it's called the carpenter bee. They make their nests and they burrow and they eat away woodwork and beams and things like that. But in the garden, they just do a wonderful job pollinating. They love making their homes in rafters, mm-hmm. and that can cause quite a lot of problems in a home.
I did a quick Google while you were looking, and I love the title of the article I found, Controlling Cantankerous Carpenter Bees. It's an article from the South African Wood Preservers Association saying how many calls they've been getting about the damage that they are doing here. Mainly black in colour. I'm going to try and find out if they are indigenous, and we'll feed that back after the 2 o'clock news. Charisse, the time has flown away as it always does. Thank you so much for joining us, and enjoy the rest of the lovely afternoon in the Old Nectar Gardens before the wind picks up. I hope you get to enjoy a few more hours at least.
Thank you, Pippa. Thank you to the Cape Talk listeners. It's always wonderful chatting to you all.
And we'll chat again soon. Charisse Viljoen, horticulturist at Old Nectar in the Yorkershoek Valley.